broadcasting worldwide on the Golf Club Network. It's the Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker.
And a good morning to you. Boy, we have a wet one, don't we? If you're going to go out and play a round of golf, let me see. On Kauai, about the only dry course is Poipu Bay. They've got a 9-10 and a 10-20. Makalei has an 11-24 on the Big Island. It's 48 degrees up at Volcano, and there's an 11-30. Should warm up by then. Kapolei has a 1 o'clock for you this afternoon. Cart path only on the windward side for the Raw Hawaiian Country Club. There's a 9-30. Olamana is open. Cart path only. There's a 9:30 there as well. You know, you're in the clubhouse, and we're really excited to have you here. Our focus today is the Golf Digest Hot List, the LPGA, and Golf Channel's Morning Drive, and Oahu Junior Golf Tournament, and the Ryder Cup. But first, let's thank the people who make this show possible.
The Golf Club, brought to you by Acura of Honolulu. Now more than ever, choosing an Acura just makes sense. With this much traffic, you should ride in comfort. Introducing the Acura RLX and RLX Advance. Poipu Bay Golf Course, 18 championship holes, visually stunning. Nature and Robert Trent Jones Jr. conspired to create a stunning venue for golfers of all abilities. A unique and unforgettable golf experience. Poipu Bay Golf Course, Kauai's South Shore Jam. And Star Protection. Get your property threat and risk assessment, then protection for your home or business, for your concert or special event, like the Hyundai Tournament of Champions. Get the Star Team on your property. Star Protection is what you need in Hawaii and California.
It's a three-day weekend, indeed, celebrating President's Day with a new Acura, sure to make you feel like the commander-in-chief of your world. With soft Milano leather, Bluetooth hands-free link, navigation system with surface street and freeway traffic, and customized audio features using Pandora and AHA compatibility. You'll create your own little oval office space in your new Acura MDX or your RLX. You got to go down and test drive that car. It is absolutely beautiful. And this weekend, during the President's Day tent sale, you'll get amazing savings with rates as low as 0.9% APR on most new Acuras in stock, or special lease offers starting at just $209 a month on the 2014 Acura ILX. Okay, stop by Acura today. They're 777 Ala Moana Boulevard under the big tent, and get the best values of the year at Acura of Honolulu. Let's go straight out. I'm not even sure where Karen Stubbles is. She's an LPGA member, LET member, and she is a member of Golf Channel's Morning Drive on-course commentator. Welcome to the show, Karen.
Thanks, Danielle. It's lovely for you to have me on.
Absolutely. And a major championship winner to the 2009 Women's British Open. What an amazing career. A mom? Do you have two boys?
I just have the one boy. He's almost seven. He'll be seven at the end of April. But I have a dog, so it's almost like having two kids, really.
What's it like being an LPGA LET member, traveling around the world? Is your husband your caddy?
He used to be. Yeah. It was great until Logan started school, and then somebody had to really stay home and make sure that he was in school and give him more of a stable base. I mean, the LPGA do such a good job with their daycare that we were able to travel together as a family for the most of it, and it was a shame to have to leave them at home. And I think that's probably where things started going south for me, golf wise, was when I had to leave everybody at home, and it became a different world for me out on the golf course.
Absolutely. I mean, the focus, the drive, having to be on the range, practicing, training physically, God, that, and wanting to give everything as a mother. You know, once you have a child, it changes everything, doesn't it?
It really does. I spoke to my old golf coach a couple of days ago, and he put it into words what I've been struggling to really find. And because I really didn't know what happened. I'm like, I don't know why I don't want to play tournaments anymore. And it was really, he said, you were just burnt out. And I think he's very true, because I've had, the last tournament I played was in Portland, Oregon, and I haven't really played much since. And to be honest with you, I'm starting to get maybe a little feel to maybe play a couple of events. So I'm probably going to play the British Open again. I still have one more year of exemption left there, and try and pick up a couple of events here in the summer when I'm not working as an on-course commentator. I'll get out there and try and play a couple just to see what I've got still.
I'm still curious.
You know,
I love
still
it.
Curious.
I had no idea your first professional event was played here in Hawaii.
It was. I Monday qualified. It was really an amazing thing for me to do, to be honest with you, because I had no expectations. I had no idea what I was getting myself in for. And I went to LA to try and Monday qualify there because I didn't really have much status. I didn't Monday qualify, but I didn't really know the ropes or what I could do. So I didn't think I could change my ticket. And then it was going to be too expensive, so I didn't change it. So I arrived in Honolulu at something ridiculous, like 2 in the morning. I got about 3 hours sleep, and then I teed it up in the Monday qualifier, and I got in. And I played and I played my first ever event, and it was awesome, actually. It was very awesome. And I played with Alison Nicholas and Sherry Turner, and I was just floored. I'm like, wow, I'm playing with girls that can really play, and I don't know if I can.
that isn't it. I mean, when you've been working, but when you get on the professional ranks and you go, wait a minute, do I belong here?
Yeah, and I had no real professional experience before. I'd played in one Women's British Open as an amateur, but I wasn't one of these sort of career amateurs that go around and play a lot of professional events before they even turn pro. So I didn't really know what to expect. And it was just a shock to me that I was even out there, to be honest. You know, to even get a conditional card at my first try, and all of a sudden I'm out here. I was like, wow, okay, maybe I can play. And I think just that, even that little inkling of a thought in my head that, you know, that maybe I can play actually carried me through my first year.
That's fantastic. And what was even more amazing, you were a professional golfer, but you were working. You had a job.
Yep.
You and your husband had a home. And who was the gentleman who decided to sponsor you for 3 years? Then you sold your house. You put all your chips on the table and said, I'm going for it.
It was funny. I mean, I was in college. I was here. I went to Florida State University, but I wasn't getting very far with it. I was never really going to be an academic. Excuse me, as a boat passes by, he's going to get his boat into the water here. I'm sitting by a dock. I went back to England. I didn't finish college. I did 3 years at Florida State. Went back to the UK to work. And so I started to work in a bar, at a golf course, bar and waitressing. And it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. But I used to have a regular set of customers would come by. And they would always sit at my table because they knew what they were going to get with me. The other waitresses were kind of scared of him because he was quite picky and he wanted it exactly how he wanted it. But I always used to talk golf with him. And one day he came up to me and said, you know, I keep seeing your name in the paper. How come you've not turned pro yet? And I said, well, you know, I'm just trying to save up the money. He said, you know what? You deserve a chance. So I'm going to give you the money to try.
Wow.
So that was it. So that really put the wheels in motion. He said, write me a budget. Let me know what you need. And I'll do it. He said, and I'll do it for 3 years because I don't expect you to get your card first time. But there you go.
that's like a dream come true for anyone who's in the business, whether it's acting or in sports, where you don't know just how much, you know, you can actually put into the game when you get there.
And it was the first time I'd really had somebody really do that for me. I'd struggled through playing amateur golf, and I always had jobs, and I was always working and trying to make ends meet. And, you know, my mum and dad really didn't have an awful lot. And so they were always struggling, and we would try and get the odd grant here and there, but nothing was really available. Either my handicap was too low, or it was too high, or I was too old, or I was too young. I never really quite fit into any of the categories where I could get any kind of financial help to help me play golf. So it was always a question of cleaning. I was working as a cleaner, or I worked behind the bar. I did some work in a cafe, a Greasy Spoon, just serving breakfast things because then I could go and play golf in the afternoon. You know, so I've done all kinds of jobs just to try and make ends meet, you know, playing golf. And this was the first time that somebody had said to me, you know what, you deserve a chance. Here you go. I believe in you, and I think you need the opportunity. And his name was Keith Rawlings, and to be honest, I mean, I wouldn't be where I am today without him.
Thank you, Keith. One of the lucky stars in your life. When did you decide to go into television?
You know, I've been toying around with it for a while, actually. The BBC over in the UK have been very helpful to me and very good to me in the past. They would always want me to come on and do some chat whilst the Women's British Open was happening. So I would go in the afternoon after I played in the morning and talk about a few bits of the course and bits and pieces. And then BBC Radio, Radio 5 Live, that do a lot of the events over there, called me up one day out of the blue and said, we'd really like you to come and commentate at the Men's Open on course. So I was like, oh, really? kind of taken aback by it that they'd asked me to do it, but I did. So I went up the Carnoustie scene. It was the one where Padre Harrington and Sergio Garcia got into that, and Sergio got in the one big memory I have is of Sergio having a bit of a cry fest about how unlucky he was in the media after. So
yes,
I mean, of all the things I could remember about that experience, that's the one thing that sticks in my mind. That's not really what one I should remember. I should remember in how awesome it was that Padraig laid up short of the burn there, and then just pitched up and made the putt to get into the playoff with him. But anyway, I digress. So Radio 5 wanted me to do some things for them. So I've done a lot of British Opens for them, and I also did the Ryder Cup for them as well, which was a lot of fun.
Wow.
And then I decided that, you know, ultimately, you know, at some point my golfing career will end, and what do I want to do? And so I've always been one to have plan B, plan C, plan D, and all the rest of it. So I had this list of things that I would do when I stopped playing golf, because there's no certainties when you play golf. You don't know if you're going to be, you know, how you're going to continue to play, or mentally how you're going to be, if you even want to. And obviously that kind of has happened to me a little bit. So what do I do? So I started to make inroads with the Golf Channel. Like every once in a while, I would say to Beth Hutter, who is the producer for the LPGA events, I said, is there any chance that you could send me out onto the golf course, and that way I could learn? So she sent me out with Jerry Foltz to shadow him in Hawaii, actually, last year. So I went out to shadow him in Hawaii, and I watched and I learned, and, you know, it was a lot of fun. And, you know, the crew is so much fun to be around, and it was just a really great experience. So a couple of other times when I'd missed the cut, I'd say to Beth, I said, Beth, is there any chance that you have a spot open for me to maybe go out on the course and try and do something? Because I hate missing the cut, and I just want to be busy and want to do something. So Beth would send me out, and I would do the odd weekend here and there. I did the weekend in Toledo, and it was the first time I'd ever had to do an interview. I was walking up the 18th with MB Park, and I was talking about MB, and this was just before she was getting ready to go for four in a row at St Andrews. So Beth said to me, can you do an interview with MB? And I'm like, and in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, oh no, I've not done an interview before. But I said, yes. I'm like, yes, of course I can. I'll be there. So I now had a bit of a panic on, okay, I've got to think of questions now. What am I going to ask her? How's this going to be? So as I'm standing there, I'm waiting, and I'm having to wait for a camera to show. And I'm like, God, I'm getting more and more nervous about asking questions, but I think it went over okay, and so that was fun. And then the last event that I played last year was in Portland, and I missed the cut there again, and luckily she gave me an opportunity to go out on the course again there, and that was a lot of fun. Really lovely experience of it.
Well, you're really good at it. You're good on television.
You.
Yes. And what I need to stress, you didn't get paid to do that, did you?
No, not at all. I wanted to do it because it was so much fun.
Yes, the message in that for people who have young, I hope you get all your kids around, because if you have a passion to do something, sometimes you've got to do it and not get any money for it. And that's your best experience.
It is. You know what, and I wanted to learn. I wanted to see how it was done, and I just have to be busy. I cannot sit still. I can't sit on my butt and do nothing. I hate it. So when you miss the cut, what else can you do? I mean, and I didn't ever feel that, you know, I didn't ever feel bad that I'd missed the cut and that I was out there commentating, because it was so much fun to talk about golf. And whenever I've watched golf, I always watch it with a dialogue going on in my head anyway. So it just gave me an outlet to talk about it, to be honest. And, you know, the other cool thing that happened was when I was at the Solheim Cup last year, I was commentating for Radio 5 Live again at Solheim Cup, and they needed somebody for Golf Central and Morning Drive to come on and do a few hits for the Solheim Cup. And all the on-course commentators that were working for the Golf Channel were busy because they were getting out to do the, you know, the starting and all the rest of it. It was just they couldn't get back in time and to be able to do it. So luckily, one of the ladies who work at the Golf Channel that does this sort of that organises the production for those little hits, her name's Lena. She said to the producer, "Well, Karen Stuffles is here. She could give it. You know, she'd be great. You sure she's played in the Solheim? You ought to give her a go." And the producer, I think, was somewhat, I don't know, we've not had her on before. And he's like, "Okay, let's just do it. Let's just do it." And apparently, I did really well. And that's really what put me in their eye to do the studio stuff, to do Golf Central stuff, and for the Morning Drive.
That's excellent.
So that was a big break for me there.
That's excellent.
That was my big break. Yeah,
I got to ask you about the UK and women coming up. You know, I mean, it's the home of golf, right?
Yep.
But there are precious few British or Scottish women who are playing on the LPGA Tour. And I find that surprising. Can we take a break and continue after this?
Sure, absolutely.
Thanks so much. We'll be back right after this. We're talking with Karen Stubbles, wife, mom, major championship winner, LPGA member, and Golf Channel now, on-course commentator, contributor to Morning Drive. We'll be back right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
Why wait to drive the Acura ILX? Why wait to experience design with purpose? An exterior so unique, you have to see it to believe it. Why wait to grab life by the wheel when you can do it now with paddle shifters in the Acura ILX? Why wait another 25 years to get what you want? The 2014 Acura ILX. Don't wait. Have a quarter-life crisis.
The 2014 ILX. Visit your local Acura dealer today.
The Acura RDX is incredibly spacious, with over 38 inches of rear legroom and over 76 cubic feet of cargo space. With leather-trimmed seating surfaces, the RDX interior was named one of Ward's 10 Best. The 2014 Acura RDX. Create your own space in the world. Acura reminds you to properly secure items stored in cargo area.
The 2014 RDX. Visit your local Acura dealer today.
Star Protection Agency, providing security across Hawaii since 1991. Licensed and bonded. Property guard and patrol services. Loss prevention. Star Protection provides the security you need with the industry-leading internet-based reporting system. One call does it all. 532-3911. Or on the web at starprotectionagency.com. Star Protection, locally owned with people you trust.
Wow, what a beautiful day. Let's go back in the clubhouse and listen to Danielle Tucker.
It's a really exciting time on the LPGA LET Tours. Women coming along. I mean, we've got Suzanne Paterson. I mean, she, you know, if she takes over number one, I think she'll be very comfortable in that position. We've got Lydia Ko, Cheyenne Woods. She won last week, and now after a difficult start in the first round, she came up with a 65 in the second round. They finished their third round. Michelle Wee, she's recommitting herself to the game. We're talking with Karen Stubbles. She's LET LPGA Tour member on Golf Channel, of course, watching all of this. What's your take on what's going on with the LPGA?
Oh my goodness, it's such an exciting time for the LPGA right now. You've got all the different rivalries that are shaping up nicely. I can see Suzanne Pedersen, Stacey Lewis rivalry right there. I mean, that's all rooted in Solheim Cup history. And the pair of them both won that number one spot from Imbe Park. And I think Imbe Park has really dropped the ball, really, by not playing in any of these first two events, because she is now behind it. You know, she's behind those two that have got off to decent starts, both in the CME Race for the Globe and the Money List and the Player of the Year race. So she's got a bit of catching up to do, and also to maintain her number one ranking if that's what she wants to do.
Why didn't she play?
I don't really know, to be honest with you. I can only assume that she wanted to ease herself into the year, to be honest. And you know, in the past, it's been easy in for us on the LPGA. When you play well, you can get into the first two events of the year, which are limited field, no cut, guaranteed money, everything. You know, it's a bit of a golden show, really. It's a nice thing to ease your way into the season without a lot of stress. You can just go and play, and there's no real worries. But the first two events of this year were actually full field events, and they had a cut, so you had to go and play well and, you know, spend your own money to make anything, and you had to play well to do it. So maybe she wasn't ready, and I potentially think she might have had a few extra commitments given her status now as the number one player in the world. And so maybe she needed a little bit extra time to get her game ready to play. That's the only thing I could see.
Yeah, it's interesting. Once you are on the top, all the things that come with being golden – take a lot out of you, and I don't think any of us who haven't been in that position can ever fully understand the commitments and the expectations that people have of you. I've been reading about Cheshire County Golf Partnership. Melissa Reed, you've been involved in the Get Into the Golf campaign, opening up schools, golf in schools, discounting coaching for women and girls. What's so difficult for women in the UK to get into golf?
Oh, you know, I don't really know. It's such a individual game, and I think that a lot of girls like to be with their friends. So it's a vicious circle, really. The more girls you have playing golf, the more girls you'll get to play golf.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it just needs to be seen as something that's a bit more trendy and something that could be more fashionable almost. Or because I think that's the reason why soccer's taken off, or any of the, you know, because you look fit when you're doing it and it's good. Whereas golf can kind of have a bit of a fuddy-duddy image at times. And I think that could potentially be why. You need to break away from that and make it a bit younger, maybe a bit fresher, and you might attract a few more girls to play.
Here in the US, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that right now you're starting to see that trend on the LPGA Tour. You've got so many young girls that are actually playing great on tour, and I think that can only help but aid more young girls to get into it.
And that's the hope, certainly. We've got the league idea here, PGA of America doing golf leagues for kids. Anything like that happening in the in Europe, in the UK in particular?
You know what, it's been such a long time since I've been there and to really see. I mean, I know that the things that I did with the schools were based in schools, and my sister's a teacher, so I understand how that all works. And it's good to get kids exposed, but I don't know so much if unless your parents play, it's not really a sport that you just go down and just pick it up. It's not as easy as just kicking a ball around.
Or even
hitting a tennis ball against a wall or anything like that. It's not as easy. You need people to actually push you in that direction, to actually open those doors initially for you.
And that's
the difference. And it has to really start from the schools, I believe, because people aren't going to go to a private club unless they know somebody that's already there, or even to a public course and just pick up the game unless they know somebody else that's doing it.
Yeah, a friend says, hey, come on, I'm going to the golf course, come with me. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
You learned to drive on the practice ground.
Yeah.
Your dad was totally into the game, wasn't he?
He was. I mean, it's an even longer story than that. He had 9 uncles, so they were all my great uncles, and they were all scratch or single figure handicapped before the war, but they were all artists and members of a course called Royal Cinqports, which meant that you would go to the golf course and you would do work on the course. You would fill divots and help break bunkers and do sort of general maintenance stuff. And then you could play after a certain time in the evening and things like that. And of course, you got it for a different set of, you know, you didn't have to pay very much for it. And they had their own club as well. Anyway, after the Second World War, none of them played. And I think that my dad always had it in his head that he just wanted to play golf because he knew that he had some, you know, some relatives that were actually very good at it. They were all single figure handicapped. So he played golf and he loved it. He too became an artisan member of a golf club, Prince's. And then when the artisan membership got abolished, he then became a regular member. And it was when I turned about 11 or so, I said to Dad, oh, I'd like some pocket money. Because all the girls at school were starting to buy CDs. Well, not CDs at the time, it was records.
Right.
Records and tapes. And they said, oh, you know, I'd like some pocket money so I could buy some tapes. And I wanted to buy the Level 42 tape is what I wanted to buy. So my dad said, okay, well, you don't get anywhere in life without working for it. You can either help your mother with the washing up every night, or you can come and caddy for me on a Saturday morning. So I'm like, right, well, that's it. I'm off caddying. That'll be me. So I would go and caddy for him. I'd just be, you know, and I used to earn a princely sum of £5 for pulling his trolley around the golf course. And it was fun. I used to love it. I used to love spending time with my dad. Didn't really understand what was going on, but I was always swishing away with his golf club. And he then said to me one day, why would you like to play? And I said, I'd love to. And he said, well, I don't know enough about it. He said, I'll just get you in with the junior lessons with the pro, and then they can fix you up. I'm like, okay. So that was that. And we used to spend so much time on the big practice ground after my little junior lessons, just hit the balls and doing stuff. And it was massive. And it was one of those places that he taught me to drive. I learned how to drive a 6-shift car on the big practice ground at Prince's Golf Club. So it was little things that made golf fun for me. And you know what was cool? The big practice ground was so big and it had so many different lumps and mounds and different things that I used to create my own games on it. I used to get in my own little world and hit balls to little flat mounds or try to get them up in the air over the mounds. And it became my own little golf course because it was so empty. There was hardly anybody there. And that was fun because at first I couldn't go out on the golf course because I didn't have enough for a full set of clubs. I had to ask for my birthday and for Christmas, and people would give money and I would put the money together and I would buy another club. And eventually I had enough for a half set, but it was... So I couldn't go out on the course initially, so I made my own course on the practice ground. It was fun.
Absolutely fabulous talking with you. Yeah. Karen Stubbles, I want to cover so much. Will you come back on the show before the U.S. Women's Open at Pinehurst?
Of course, absolutely.
That would be
I
fabulous, because I'd like to know. I've got a guest waiting, and we've got the hot list coming up, and Bob.
Sure.
Bob, it's just. But I want to know what you think about the U.S. Women's Open at Pinehurst after the men muck it up.
I know. It's gonna be quite wild, actually. And I think the USGA have got their work cut out for them trying to keep it in decent order. And you know, the potential for me is thinking that the men are going to have a softer golf course than they would have expected at the U.S. Open because they cannot let the greens die. So it may be slightly softer than what they used to.
Well, we'll have to talk about that. I'm looking forward to our next conversation. Karen Stubbles, Golf Channel on-course commentator, Morning Drive contributor. I call you a co-host of Morning Drive because when you're there, you're there.
Yep.
And, of course,
that's
Golf
good.
Central as well. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Danielle, it was my pleasure. I love talking about golf, so anytime.
Oh, thank you. And we'll be back with Guy Yamamoto, our Hawaii Hall of Fame latest member. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
Hoipu Bay on Kauai's South Shore. Come share our home where the Grand Slam was played. Robert Trent Jones Jr. saw the mountains and felt the sea. Sure, great vistas and greens most people only dream of. Take the day off or do business with a bunch of your best customers. Come join the fun and the aloha at Poipu Bay. Call us for your tee time, where great golf is played every day at Poipu Bay.
An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Call Star Protection Agency for your office building, shopping center, or construction site. Let Star Protection take care 24/7. They know what to do to protect your assets, or join the Star team. Need a threat and risk assessment for your business? Call 532-3911. 532-3911. Star Protection Agency, across Hawaii since 1991. Get Star Protection.
Oh man, will you look at that? It's right down the fairway. What a beautiful shot. Oh man, can't be too happy about that one. Now, back to Danielle Tucker on The Golf Club.
And you can celebrate President's Day with a new Acura. It's sure to make you feel like the commander-in-chief in your world. There are RLXs. You can put 6 iPod playlists into it. Never worry about who gets to be in charge. This weekend, during the President's Day 10th sale event, you'll get amazing savings with rates as low as 0.9% APR on most new Acuras in stock or special lease offers that start at only $209 a month. All right. Let's get to our world. He is the latest inductee in the Hawaii Hall of Fame. And it's such a pleasure to talk to the general manager at Mililani Golf Club, Guy Yamamoto. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning. I mean, did you hear Karen Stubbles talking about making the practice range into her little golf course?
Yeah. It sounds like things that all kids love to do once they get on the golf course.
Yeah. I mean, it's like having your own little world, and you can create all kinds of obstacles that you need to get around. I think that's part of the beauty of being a child and having space.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Mililani Golf Club encourages walking and playing. When do people get to walk and play?
We have Walking Twilight, which starts at 2:30 right now, and we also have what's called a preferred club membership, and whether you join the weekday membership or the 7-day membership, that gets you a half an hour's head start on the rest of the golfers.
Oh, cool. So we should just get in touch with Mililani Golf Club and ask them how I can become a preferred member.
Yeah, anyone that answers the phone can tell you about it. And it's fun. We got a bunch of players that come out on a regular basis, so it has that nice homey feel, and it's great.
It sounds like, and then walking and playing is the best way. You get to know the course, you get to have the feel. You're not in and out of the cart. I think getting in and out of the cart disrupts your whole rhythm.
Sometimes it does, and I think you know, our golfers are more in tune with what kind of trees we got and the whole bit, you know.
Yeah. Guy Yamamoto is the general manager of Mililani Golf Course. He's a, well, in the back in the 80s and 90s, he was a dominant Hawaii amateur, one of only five island golfers to win the U.S. Amateur Men's Public Links Championship. He did that in 1994 when he turned back Chris Riley. It was the 37th hole at the Eagle Bend Golf Club in Big Fork, Montana. Boy, 37 holes, huh?
Yeah, it's ironic. In 1975, I caddied for the first time at the first amateur public links that was held at Wailua Golf Course, first of three, and that was my first golf tournament I got to watch, and it was an all-Hawaii final between Randy Barinaba and Alan Yamamoto, and that ended on the 37th hole as well. So fortunately for me, this time, you know, the person named Yamamoto was able to come out victorious.
You know, Matt Janella, Golf Channel on Morning Drive, whenever he lists his top favorite courses in the islands, Wailua is always in the top five.
It's a great golf course if you've never played it, and those who have can truly appreciate, you know, it's not your average muni, I guess is a good way to put it, and it's a good test of golf. It tests your short game as well as your long game, and Mr. Shirai, who designed the front nine, did and was my high school golf coach, did an absolute wonderful job setting it up.
Absolutely. I mean, Guy Yamamoto won a dozen Hawaii Golf Championships. He's one of only seven island golfers to have won both the state match and stroke play championships. He captured the Manoa Cup in 1985, and then again in 1992. That was a big... did you think you're going to win in 92 after winning in 85?
Well, in 85, when I first won, I thought, you know, you think of people who have won it before, and Ken Muioka is probably the one that pops up first because he's won it six times. And I think back then Brandon had only won one, so.
Yeah, the man who's won it so many times we can't keep count, right?
And
yeah.
You think you can do it, and in 92 I was quite happy to win it again, and I thought about it, and I'm like going, geez. If I keep this pace up, it'll take me 42 years, which will...
Yeah, but I love a quote that I found at the Aloha Section PGA site. As a teenager, you played Kauai High School golf, right?
Correct.
But when you started playing, you're quoted to say, I couldn't understand why it was so difficult to hit a stationary ball.
Yeah, I was like 13 and... played a little baseball and wasn't super good at it, you know, by any stretch of the imagination, but I always thought it would be easy, you know, because the ball's not moving and you know what's before you, and my only other correlation was baseball, you know, the ball's moving, he's throwing something that you're not supposed to hit, you know, his goal is to make you miss, and that was just probably my basic reasoning why I thought golf would be easy.
Right. And I mean, it just shows you, here's a great golfer, Guy Yamamoto, and has the same question you have when you go out, okay? Why can't I hit that thing that's just sitting there? It should be so simple. It's not moving. I think that part of the problem is we have, you know, it's just all the thinking that we do. It's not moving, so there's a whole bunch of time to think. There's no, right, the baseball's coming at you. You better do something. You better react to it. You better hit it with a, get that bat moving.
it could very well be, you know, even for me as a fledgling golfer, I wasn't the best, you know, a junior golfer by...
Yeah, you know, look where you are today. How does it feel to be in the Hall of Fame with folks like David Ishii? I mean, do you now realize how good you are?
It's just a little, you know, like I've got to pinch myself to really know that it's for real sometimes. You know, the people in the Hall of Fame are people that you've idolized or read about, and their accomplishments are, are huge. Hawaiian Open winners, David, Ted Makalena, golf pioneers, like my golf coach, Mr. Shirai, Bob Tom. There's just so many great champions, Alan Yamamoto, Lance Suzuki, Dan Nishimoto, there's 60, I think, seven that preceded me, and Bev Kim. There's just, the list is quite distinguished. And,
absolutely, yes.
And just very fortunate to Guinea Cup.
Yeah, and Guinea Cup, exactly. And I'm so glad that you just said that, because I was just looking at the Oahu Junior Golf Association presenting the 20th annual Guinea Cup Memorial Golf Tournament. And you are, in addition to all the other things you are, besides a dad and a husband, did you do something for Valentine's Day?
Yes, we did.
Okay, good. you are the vice president of the Oahu Junior Golf Association, and we're putting on the fun tournament for the benefit of the juniors of the OJGA. I don't know what it is about putting the alphabet together for Danielle. She has a real tough time. It's a shotgun start at 12:30 in the afternoon, but you check in at 10:30 for a lunch and maybe a little bit of stretching and warming up. Isn't that a good idea?
Yeah, and socializing, of course. And then on Wednesday, March 19th, and lunch is provided. And I think Pearl Country Club makes a great lunch, but to complement their lunch and their dinner, our president, Norman Asau, is also the chef at Mid-Pacific Country Club, and he usually prepares a few dishes to complement the lunch. And so
is Norman going to go play golf and cook?
Norman's cooking and busy taking care of all the details, as well as his wife and a bunch of other volunteers.
People who are dedicated to Oahu Junior Golf.
Yes, Norman's three children all played in it, but they are now alumni and parents and entrepreneurs. So it's really fantastic that the Asaus are so dedicated to it, and they receive no compensation for it, and actually, they really don't want any publicity. They just are really happy to help the kids, give back to what their children received.
It's wonderful. The format is a three-person team scramble. The maximum team handicap for men is 30. For women, it's 36. The entries are limited to the first 216 players. It's $450 for the three-person team, and $260 of that is tax-deductible. You'll have special event holes and door prizes. That'll be at the banquet following the tournament, and you need to get your registration in before March 7th and the deadline, or until the tournament is filled up, okay? So what you need to do is call Sue Asau, and her number is 392-3807. And you need to help make the Oahu Junior Golf Association be able to give back to the kids. And like I said, $260 of the $450 team entry is tax deductible. It's a three-person team scramble. Now, tell us what a team scramble is.
Well, it's the three members all hit a drive, and you select the best shot.
Yeah, I like that.
And then you pick the other two up, and you go to that spot, and you hit again, and everybody hits their second shot, and if it's a par four, it goes on the green, take the most, maybe not necessarily, usually the closest one, but I would say the most strategic one, and from there, all three of you putt, and if it goes in, make a birdie for your team, and if not, I believe it'll probably be automatic two putt to expedite the speed of play, and you do that for 18 holes.
Is that great?
And we've got some fun events. I think there usually is one hole that has four or five putting cups on the green, but no flag, so you can't see it from the fairway.
Ah.
And oh. There's one hole that the cup is, I think it's probably about 10 inches in diameter, so a little over 2 times the size of a normal cup. And that's always fun. It looks big, and sometimes it's even more frustrating to know that the hole's so big and you miss the putt, you know?
Wasn't that the idea from Jack Nicklaus?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think theirs was 15-inch cup, something like that. So,
but it's funny what you just said. It's even more frustrating because the ball, you know, the hole is so huge, right?
Especially after you play the 4 1/4, and you're going, this is like at least twice as easy.
Duck soup.
and the kids will be out there. We have a hole that the kids can drive for you. You know, they'll tee off and, you know, for a small donation, they'll hit a ball for you. And I think that becomes your starting point. So if they hit your tee shot, you lie zero out in the fairway.
Love it. I was over at Pearl Country Club. Mary B. Porter King came over on Wednesday and gave the EWGA an awesome rules clinic. We had a walking rules clinic. We could have been there for 8 hours, and we spent 2 hours with her. And the junior golfers were there. Watching them tee off, it was like, wow, amazing. I mean, amazing players. So, yes. So, for a donation to the OJGA, the Oahu Junior Golf Association, you could get them to tee off for you and play from their spot.
Correct.
I'm liking this very much. This is a 3-person team scramble. It all benefits the Oahu Junior Golf Association. It is the 20th annual Guinea Cup Memorial Golf Tournament. So get in touch. And if you know, I don't know how many times Sue wants me to give out her phone number. So maybe we should just say call Pearl Country Club?
Yeah, they could do that, sure.
Yeah, call Pearl Country Club, or Sue's number is 392-3807. Guy Yamamoto is the general manager at the Mililani Golf Club. You play Nike, don't you?
Currently, I have a set of Nike irons, and I'm trying out that new Covert Red driver, and it's pretty exciting.
It's pretty exciting. It made the hot list, Golf Digest hot list. It seems to be one of the top drivers of the 12 that I saw on the gold hot list. So, you like it?
I do. And for me, I'm not much of a. For those who know me, I'm not much of a. equipment changer, you know, but the groove rule, you know, forced my hand to change to get some new clubs, so new irons and some new wedges, and it's fun.
Are they easier to play?
You know, they're supposed to be, but I think with age and lack of practice, they've become just okay, you know.
Yeah,
as soon as I practice more, they'll be fine.
Exactly. See, that's the thing that people don't realize, too. You may be in the game. Here you are. You're the general manager of Mililani Golf Club. Aren't you on the golf course all the time? Just playing all the time?
No, not really. I relate it to the ticket agent at the airport. You know, we go to the airport every day, but they go to the airport every day, but they don't go anywhere. So.
Right.
But, you know, I'm happy to see people come and play golf. So
yeah, and you're happy to be on the course and seeing that beautiful vista at Mililani Golf Club. And there is walking, so get in touch with them and become a preferred member, and you get special tee times.
Yes.
You get to go out a little bit earlier than everybody else.
Yeah, so the preferred members, besides, you know, the ability to start earlier, they also get discounts on their applicable green fee. So, you know, if they're morning golfers, you know, they can get a discount on their morning green fee as well.
Awesome. Guy Yamamoto, thanks so much for being on the show.
No, thank you. And
awesome.
Look forward to seeing everyone at the golf course.
Absolutely. We're going to get out, even though it's raining. You know, golfers, we're like ducks. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
You
thank
too.
You.
Aloha. And we're coming up next, speaking of golf list, a hot list, one of the hot list testers. He is the equipment editor over at Golf World magazine. His name is Mike Johnson. You've met him before here on the show. We're going to talk about the hot list and what's hot. We'll be back right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to the Golf Club.
You get up, you head out, you approach your Acura RLX. You push start, check surface street traffic with available AcuraLink. Feel the Acura RLX's 310 horsepower pin you back. Hug the turns with precision all-wheel steer. You park, hit your desk, get it done. You head home in your 2014 Acura RLX. Your day is anything but routine. 3-year traffic subscription included. See your Acura dealer for system and coverage details.
2014 RLX. Visit your local Acura dealer today.
The beaten path is not for everyone. That's why we designed the new Acura MDX just for you. With Jewel-Eye LED headlights so you can see what others don't. One-button access to the third row with one-touch walk-in and available AcuraLink surface street traffic. Introducing the new 2014 Acura MDX. Maybe it's called the beaten path because it can be beaten. 3-year traffic subscription included. See your Acura dealer for system and coverage details.
2014 MDX. Visit your local Acura dealer today.
In the security business, trust is earned over time. That's why Star Protection Agency has grown to be the largest locally owned security company in Hawaii. We've earned a reputation as a common sense, highly responsive, cutting edge security provider. Our clients know that we're watching out for them. We know that our fast response is what makes us a star performer.
And we'd like to thank our clients for their trust over the past 20 years.
Trust your security to the Star. Star Protection Agency.
Yeah, yeah. A mongoose stole my ball. What's the rule on that?
Let's get back into the clubhouse with Danielle Tucker.
And welcome back in. If you have an opportunity, and of course you've got time, it's raining, what better to do than to go celebrate President's Day with a new Acura? It's going to make you feel like the commander-in-chief in your world. You got to go in and test drive the RLX. It feels so good, and there's so much room in the back. This weekend, during the President's Day tent sale, you'll get amazing savings with rates as low as 0.9% APR on most of the new Acuras in stock, or a special lease offer that starts at just $209 a month on the 2014 Acura ILX. Stop by Acura today. Check out all the models. It's at 777 Ala Moana Boulevard. You'll see the big tent and get the best values of the year at Acura of Honolulu. Now let's find out what the best drivers of the year are. We've got to get into the clubhouse. Mike Johnson, senior editor, Equipment Golf World magazine. He's also one of the best golfers, I understand, in the magazine's staff. Welcome to the show, Mike.
I think somebody's given you some bad information as far as me being one of the best golfers, Danielle.
Oh, gee, just take the compliment. I got to start with a final thought. I was reading your chat that I wasn't able to participate in. I was, and you had the final thought. Somebody said, you know, is there a final thought you have? And your final thought was this: I know everyone wants magazines to rate a winner, but that's irresponsible. What we can do is get you to a group of clubs you should consider. And after that, it's up to the individual and a good fitter that can get you to the right place. I thought that's perfect, isn't it? So you've stopped doing the top club, haven't you?
Well, yeah. I think what we found is this. You know, the most frequently asked question we get at Golf Digest is, what should I play? And that's a logical question, right? People are looking for guidance. There's a lot of equipment out there. It's kind of this maze that they have trouble navigating. So they're looking for someone to say, you know, the easy way out.
Yes.
The best club for you is this. The problem with that as a magazine is I'm not watching you hit. I have no idea what your swing speed is. I have no idea what your angle of attack is. I have, you know, no idea what appeals to you personally in terms of what kind of sound you like. So what we try to do with the hot list is we try to put forth the clubs that we think are significant. You know, if you're not on the list, we probably wouldn't recommend you look at those clubs. And people say, well, you know, you have 12 gold drivers. And yeah, we do, but we looked at over 40 drivers. You know, so we narrowed that down by 28 for you. Then you can look at those 12 and look at what we said about each club, and there's certain things that'll resonate with you, certain different things that'll resonate with me, certain different things that'll resonate with another consumer, And they can then hopefully narrow that down by reading the hot list to say, wow, these three or four drivers I think would be really good for me. And then they have to take that extra step to go to a store, to go to a shop, to go to a fitter, and then narrow it down to the right one for them.
Yeah, and a lot of it has to do with what you what you're looking at. You know, I mean, you, do you like what you see? And that sparks the demand. I saw one person who said, "Why does demand have any part of your rating?"
Well, demand has a part of our rating simply because some people want what is the hot thing out there, and we recognize that. I mean, I think the great thing about our system is if you put zero value in demand, then just scratch out all the demand rankings that we have and look at performance, look at innovation, and look at look, sound, and feel, and how we rated the clubs based on those. I mean, that's perfectly fine. But the fact is, you know, when something wins on tour or when something has a lot of buzz, there is an interest created about those products that excites consumers. So to ignore it completely, I don't think would be right. I do think what we've done over the years is lessen its influence. It was actually 20% of the score in year one. And looking back, that's kind of ludicrous. Now it's 5% of the score, which is, you know, it's important, but obviously there's 95% that can get you on the list. And one of the reasons we wanted to do that was we wanted smaller companies to have a shot at getting on the list. We didn't want demand to be this overriding factor. And then, you know, past years we've had clubs like Scratch Golf with wedges and Bobby Jones with its Fairway Woods and Hybrids be gold medal winners, and people had really never heard of those companies before they got on the hot list.
And that's what's cool. Now you have the hot list testers. Tell us how long you guys test and how many people are involved in the testing.
Yeah, they are, I have to say, they're my favorite group, and that's not to downplay the role of the academics or the retailers we have on our panel, but our player testers are just everyday golfers. And they are as committed a group as I have ever seen. They will test from 8 in the morning until 3 in the afternoon with some obvious logical breaks in. We actually have chair masseuses out on the range, so if someone's feeling a little tight, they can go, you know, get their neck or back worked on, take a little break. What we try to do is put them in a position to where the last ball they hit of the day is as good as the first ball they hit.
Wow.
And their diligence in that is really amazing. We have 16 testers who test virtually all the categories. Then we bring in another group of 6 to 8, little more higher handicap, solely to test the Super Game Improvement irons. And the reason we do that is our low handicap players we take out of that equation, because we don't feel that, you know, the attributes in those irons aren't geared to that player.
Yeah.
So we test those clubs with a separate group, and we feel that's a little better barometer of what people are looking for in that category.
I think what people need to take away from this is the hot list is not a bunch of guys who work for a magazine that would benefit from putting a particular brand at the top because that brand might spend more money. This is a group of testers. They have nothing to gain. They're just having fun testing equipment and giving you feedback. Do I have that
exactly.
right?
Exactly. I mean, one of the first marching orders we give them is this. The name on the club means nothing. Whatever the club might cost means nothing. What your expectations of a brand are means nothing. Allow yourself to be totally surprised in every way. And whether that's a big brand may not actually be very good, or a no-name brand might actually be excellent, that's what you need to be prepared to do. And I think with people, you know, it's kind of an age-old thing that we hear every year about big brands dominating the hot list. And that's true, but as I tell them, big brands are big brands for a reason. They usually make really good stuff. But that doesn't mean every single year of the hot list, we have had clubs from one of the 5 or 6 top brands in equipment not even make the list, let alone, you know, be silver or whatever. And every year we've had no-name companies whose clubs do make the list. And I think we take particular pride in that. You know, there's a lot of people say, well, it's advertising-driven or whatever. And if you look at it carefully, that argument just simply doesn't hold water, because if, you know, company A does really well one year, well, that means company B, C, and D didn't do as well. So for everyone that's happy, there's someone who's not happy. And to say it's driven, you know, solely by advertising dollars, when you put it under scrutiny, it just doesn't hold up.
No. Well, particularly when you know exactly how you get come to your conclusions. I mean, it's these people are independent testers. They're donating their time.
It's independent testers, and then it's the four judges getting in a room for literally 2 weeks and slugging it out over every debate. I mean, we had one debate this year over two clubs in the area of innovation. So it's two clubs in one of our four criteria in one of our categories, and it lasted over 2 days and took us more than 11 hours to finally come to the conclusion which one we thought deserved to be slotted higher than the other.
Can I ask you which two clubs those were?
You can ask. I'm not going to tell you. It was in the driver category. And in the grand scheme of things, it really had no effect on the final result. But it speaks to how we want to be thorough, and we want to be, you know, we want to be as buttoned up as possible. Our last sanity check when we review our list is we look at it and say, can we defend what we just did? And, you know, we understand some manufacturers may not like the result, but if we have a defense for that result, for why we came to that conclusion, we feel pretty secure in our choice. And we don't finalize the list until every club that's on that list, and even the ones that aren't, we feel we have a very fair and valid defense for why we did what we did.
Interesting. We are KPUA Hilo, KGU Honolulu, KONI Lanai City, KTOH Kalaheo. Now,
That's alphabet soup right there.
Yeah, that's all the radio stations you're on. In addition to being, of course, on RadioGolfClub.com, and you can listen to the show if you're just joining us late anytime you want at RadioGolfClub.com, and you go to listen, and then you click on the link, and there I've got from 2007 still in the library that you can listen to. And Mike Johnson has been one of my best of shows, because his information about equipment is always superior. He's the senior editor equipment for Golf World magazine, and he's a great golfer, because I say so. And now, this is what I've come to the conclusion. The putter, you may try out another putter, but you always go back to the one you love. You could have 20, but there's the one favorite that you'll probably take out when you're not really comfortable. You know, you're going to say, no, I really can't leave that. Yeah, I really need that. Okay? Then there's your irons. And as Guy Yamamoto was just talking about, the only reason he changed his irons is because the groove rule changed, and he had to. Then there's the driver. And the driver, now, I got to tell you, Mike, the price tag on these drivers, the 400, the 500, the 350, that's some pricey stuff for us to be considering changing every 6 months, every year. You know, we want to make golf more accessible, but it seems like, is there any way they could bring the price down?
Well, you know, it's a hard battle, right? Everybody wants more technology. Everybody wants a better performing club. And to do that usually takes very massive amounts of research and development, usually an investment in better materials, better manufacturing processes, and all those cost money. So that makes it very difficult to try to bring the cost down. Now, sometimes what you do see, and what people don't understand, is if you go back to the early or mid 1990s, drivers were $400 and $500. So the price of a high-end driver really has not gone up in almost 20 years, it's really kind of been the same, and the wheelhouse has been that $300 mark. Now, what I would tell your listeners is, if you want to buy a new driver but you don't want to pay the full price, if you have some old clubs lying around, old drivers or old putters or whatever, and you're not going to use them ever again, you can trade those in and apply the trade-in value to the purchase of your new club. And you can find out what the value of that is by going to pga.com/value guide. And there's over 6,000, you know, makes and models of clubs that you can find the value of. And it's really an underutilized tool, I think, by the consumer today.
You know, and what you got to remember, don't wait a long time before you go and trade in those clubs to get something newer. Because the longer, it's not like clubs appreciate.
Well, no, it's not. And it's like, it's a little bit like trading in a car, right? You always think it, you always think you should get more than you want to. For, you know, than you're going to get for it. But the fact is, if you got $50 or $40 for an older driver that you're never going to use again, that's just going to sit in your basement, that's just taking the purchase of a new $300 driver down to $250.
Yeah.
You know, it just makes it more palatable. And as far as switching over, you know, is the driver 6 months from now going to be that much better than the driver is out now? It's going to be better. Is it going to be significantly better? Probably not. The changes are kind of incremental right now. But if you haven't swapped out your driver in 3 to 5 years, there are significant differences now. And the good news for everyday players is most of the differences benefit the everyday player. The center hit has been maxed out for some time. What manufacturers have been able to do is really increase the benefit on the miss hit. And that's a real plus for everyday players.
Now, how have they done that? How is it possible to miss hit and still have that ball in play?
Well, what they've been able to do is, you know, for in terms of stability, they've been able to, manufacturing processes and materials have gotten better to where they can make the walls of a driver and the faces of a driver thinner, and they'll still hold up to the constant pounding that they take. And that, you know, if they had made them this thin 10 years ago, they would have caved in. There would have been failure. So by being able to thin it out, that gives them lots of weight to play with. So what they can do then is they can move weight to the back and the outer edges, and that increases moment of inertia, which is essentially stability and also better performance on miss hits. Hmm. What you can also now do is make the outer areas of the face thinner, and they'll hold up. Thinner face, more ball speed. So the benefits are really there on the miss hits now in a way that they weren't a decade ago.
It's amazing. We're talking with Mike Johnson, senior editor, Equipment, Golf World Magazine. And it is interesting that over the 20 years, with all the research and development, all of the new metals they're using for these clubs, that the price hasn't gotten higher, so to speak. And considering, you know, inflation and all that stuff, they're holding it steady at $350, $400, $500. How about the Big Bertha coming back? What drove that?
Well, I think what we're seeing with Callaway Golf is kind of a resurgence and a renaissance. And it started when Chip Brewer was named CEO close to 2 years ago. Chip is a golf guy, always has been. His father is a former president of the USGA. I mean, Chip grew up around golf, and he knows what he's doing. He also is a CEO that has a very keen understanding of golf R&D and technology, and he wasn't afraid to go in and basically right off the bat say, hey, not good enough. We need to do better here. And part of that is marketing. And what they found was the Big Bertha name still has great cachet with golfers.
Mm-hmm.
But what they needed to do was apply that name to a piece of equipment kind of worthy of it, if you will. And it wasn't just Big Bertha. They brought back the Apex name in irons, which, as people know, you know, was a standard for the Ben Hogan Company for many years. So these micro brands that have a lot of cachet, if you put them on clubs worthy of them, the consumer responds. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing with Big Bertha.
Yeah, and I love the comments, hot for Titleist. Let's go to Titleist right now, just for a second. One of the hot list gold winners was the Titleist Club, and I just need to scroll down. Perhaps Titleist drivers endure because they appear to have been engineered by Da Vinci and drawn by Rembrandt. That's what hot, okay? Not the adjustability that needs a guidebook is so last decade. Now, I thought that was interesting that all 12 of the drivers on the hot list, gold, are all adjustable drivers for the first time. And yet here, Titleist is saying, you know, one of the comments is, it's too hard to adjust this Titleist driver.
Well, I think what we've seen is, I'll address kind of a couple of them. Yes, all the drivers on the hot list are adjustable this year. And one of the reasons for that is adjustability is no longer viewed as kind of a nice extra by consumers. It's an expectation now. And for a company to have a non-adjustable driver, yes, there's still a place for that. Many tour players will play a non-adjustable driver, some better amateurs. But the fact is, if you're appealing to the masses, it better be adjustable. It helps with fitting, and it also helps the player who doesn't get fit have the ability to kind of fit themselves over time. As for the Titleist driver, you know, obviously it scores very highly with us. And the dual adjustability has a great benefit in that it can independently adjust certain areas, you know, lie angle, face angle, loft, etc. But it's complex. It really is. You know, it's got A, B, C, D, and 1, 2, 3, 4. And you kind of have this bingo card, if you will, that you need to look at to tell you what setting should be in what area. So it's not very intuitive, mm-hmm. whereas you see things like TaylorMade's SLDR, you know, the sliding weight on the sole, one side says fade, one side says draw. That's pretty easy for the everyday golfer to understand. So I think we've seen other companies try to make it, pardon the phrase, as idiot-proof as possible. And the Titleist one's a little more complex. It's a great technology. Would just be better if it was a little simpler to understand.
Yeah, and then you definitely need to be fitted. I frankly, if I'm not good enough to do the adjusting myself, I don't understand everything about my own swing. A fitter will actually see things that I can't see. For somebody who's good, they can do their own adjusting. What do you recommend?
Well, I think you hit it right on the head, and it's kind of one of my biggest pet peeves, and I actually wrote a piece for Golf Digest Sticks on it for this coming week's edition, which is on fitting and the fact that most everyday players are like, you know, I'm not good enough to go get fit. Wrong, wrong, wrong. The mediocre player, everyday player, he's the person that needs to get fit more than anybody else. A good player has the skills to overcome a poor fit. And they can often self-fit themselves because they're more in tune with their swing, with their ball flight, etc. Everyday players who are poorly fit have no chance to get better. They have no chance to overcome whatever swing flaw they have. And in addition, part of a good fitting is set makeup. And a lot of everyday players might have, say, a driver, 3-wood, 5-wood, couple of hybrids, and maybe a pitching wedge and a 56-degree sand wedge, when they'd be much better off ditching one of the wood clubs and adding another wedge. You know, a good fitter is really going to help the everyday player. I have seen it time and time and time again. It's not just about trying to sell you equipment. It's about trying to get you in the right equipment for your game.
Now, this is a big one for people who are getting into the game. Maybe they've been in the game and have been out of the game, and they've got old clubs, and you know they'd like to go to the course and kind of look hip. Or somebody who's just starting. Do you have to go and buy a whole complete set of clubs?
Absolutely not. For starters, one of the great benefits of the trade-in programs that I talked about earlier is that there is now a used club market out there, and there is a lot of very good equipment that would be very good for beginners that at, you know, a greatly reduced price. So the barrier to entry financially can be lessened significantly by doing that. I would still recommend, though, even if you don't go to see a true fitter, you know, rely on someone that you know understands the game and understands equipment a little bit to help guide you into some equipment that's going to help your enjoyment. One of the hard things for beginners is they don't want to make the investment in equipment, and that's perfectly understandable, but by not doing so, they make the game more difficult. It's already a really hard game to begin with, and so to make it more difficult is going to lessen their enjoyment, might even lessen their ability to stay with the game. So do you need all the bells and whistles? Absolutely not. Do you need a full set? Probably not that either. But you do need to get some half-decent stuff. You know, cut-down equipment for juniors is a disaster because it throws the swing weights off. Go out, get some clubs that more fit what your skill level is, and you'll be okay.
Yeah, I kind of equate it to when you go to the bowling alley and you just get one of the bowling balls that they've got there and you try to put your fingers in it, you know you're going to throw the ball better if you've got it actually bored out for your hand. So imagine if you just go and grab a bunch of clubs. It's not going to work as well if those clubs are fit for your body, your hands, your height, everything, your swing. So go to a demo day. Get to know the different guys at the demo day. They're more than happy to help you figure out and how you can build your set and get comfortable with your game. Mike Johnson, thanks so much for being on the show. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Anytime, Danielle. Glad to be on.
Absolutely. We're going to come back and talk some Ryder Cup with Bob Bupka. Tom Watson made an appearance at the Northern Trust. Seems like it's going to be a monthly sort of thing before Ryder Cup. We'll be back right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
It was our office manager's birthday, and she loves golf. So we decided to get together for golf at Poipu Bay, and we invited a bunch of our customers. It turned into a party. The clubhouse restaurant made a fabulous lunch. The customers had a great time and met the people they give orders to. They were golf buddies long before the 19th hole. Golf at Poipu Bay. Family, friends, business, and fun at Poipu Bay Golf Course on Kauai's South Shore. Spectacular. Call 742-8711 and book your tee time, get together, or event at Poipu Bay. That's 742-8711. Poipu Bay Golf Course, Kauai's South Shore Gem.
Wow, what a beautiful day. Let's go back in the clubhouse and listen to Danielle Tucker.
And go celebrate President's Day with a new Acura. It's fabulous today because they've got the tent right there, 777 Alamoana Boulevard. 3 days, President's Day sale. They've got the best deals. Rates as low as 0.9 APR on most new Acuras in stock. Lease offers starting at just $209 a month on the 2014 Acura ILX. Go down to 777 Alamoana Boulevard. Go say hi to TJ for me. All right, we're going to talk Ryder Cup. Tom Watson on just why and who he's choosing as his second Ryder Cup assistant captain pick.
To help me with information about the players and how they're playing. That's one of the critical things that a vice captain does. And with that said, it's great to have somebody with experience. It's great to have somebody you can really play. And I've chosen Raymond Floyd to be my vice captain. Raymond has had a tremendous amount of Ryder Cup experience. He's been successful as a Ryder Cup player. I actually played for him in 1989 when I was on the Ryder Cup team. I actually chose him in 1993 to be my at-large picks, one of my at-large picks along with Lanny Watkins, and he performed admirably.
So with that, let's bring in Bob Bupka, voice of golf, co-host of the Grill Room radio show, author of The Ryder Cup, golf's greatest event. He's powerful enough to set off betting frenzies in England, in the UK. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Hey, Danielle. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. And it was interesting to see, I was not really that surprised. Tom Watson seems to be putting together a team of guys that are his age group to help the young guys accomplish the mission to win the Ryder Cup.
Well, after you clear away all the smoke, the way it's really done is who's ever the captain then picks a couple of his friends to be vice captain, and then after he picks the friends, then he comes up with all the reasons why that was a good pick. It's not the other way around. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, Andy North won two times down at the Legends, playing with Tom Watson. Raymond Floyd's an old friend of his, and Raymond, you know, just not too long ago, lost his wife Maria, so Raymond would welcome the opportunity for the major distraction for a while to get back on his feet, and, you know, that's just the way things are done. Now, having said that, Danielle, let me assure you that if Tom Watson wins in Scotland, all you're going to hear is, boy, that was brilliant, picking Raymond Floyd and Andy North as his vice captain. If Tom Watson loses in Scotland, be assured you're going to hear, well, that was kind of crazy, picking Raymond Floyd and Andy North as his vice captain.
Right.
I mean, that's just the way it goes.
Yeah, right. But the good thing about it, when I was listening to Tom Watson, and I know you did too, he talked about how his job is to set the stage and make everything easy for the guys to go out and get the job done. Is that what the captain does?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you know, Tom Watson's used it quite a bit ever since being picked by Ted Bishop and the PGA of America, Ted being the president, and it was his idea. I will say this much to you. When Tom Watson was first announced, I had the pleasure and honor of being with Ted Bishop, and he said to me, "What do you think, Bob, of me picking Tom Watson?" And I said, "I'm going to be honest with you, Ted. You know, it could turn out to be a fantastic pick, but to me, it smacks a little of desperation. You know, it hadn't been going well. The U.S. has lost 7 of the last 9 Ryder Cups. And now a bold move like this is made by Ted Bishop." I went on to say, answer me this, Ted. What happens if Tom Watson doesn't win? Do you ask the Pope to be the captain when we go back to Valhalla?
Right, or Dustin Johnson. I mean, what do? You know, do we go to the real young guys? Freddie Couples, the only person who can lead a team. What is it about Fred that he brings to, as captain, to an event? And he's captain the President's Cup, he's been successful. It's a different ball game, but do you think someone like a laid-back Freddie Couples would be effective at Ryder Cup?
Yeah, he'd be very effective if his players played well. he'd be horrible if his players played terrible. I mean, you know, the Ryder Cup captain, in reality, gets way too much credit for the victories, and takes way too much blame for the defeat. I mean, they're not out there making any putts, or they're not putting the the ball in play and hitting all the critical shots when the time requires. So it's a very, very tough job. It's a job that is certainly a lot of prestige connected with it. If anybody is fitting for the amount of prestige, Tom Watson, and when you add the fact that he's won 5 Open Championships, he's very much beloved in Scotland. This is going to be the first Ryder Cup in Scotland. There's a lot going on, besides the captain picking what color shirts, his team is going to win. Where?
Right. He's been in 4 Ryder Cups, in 77, 81, 83, 89. He's got a great record, so he's got the experience. But the fans are always like a part of the team, against you or for you. And I thought this was interesting what he said. Tom Watson, during the news conference at Northern Trust, He talked about just fan etiquette during the event. This is what he said.
What we try to do, and what I did as a captain in '93, was after the infamous war by the shore and the mentality of some of our fans at Kiowa, Bernard Gallagher and I basically just made an agreement to try to keep it down and make a point to talk about it in front of the public and say, you know, we're here, keep the etiquette of the game right. You know, this isn't a soccer match. This isn't a baseball game where you yell, swing, 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 batter, you know, all that sort of stuff. We don't do that in golf. And that's what separates golf from other sports, honestly.
So,
and I think that's why it has a different way of playing, a different set of etiquette, rules of etiquette that makes it refreshing.
Okay. My question to you, Bob, is do you think that the fans can be kept from being unruly in Ryder Cup?
Well, yeah, you know, that's a fine line there. It's a great question, Danielle. But, what is unruly? I mean, if they're cheering and screaming at the top of their lungs for their player, is that unruly? I don't happen to think so. I think the crowds over the last 20 years or so has really made the Ryder Cup into the unbelievable international event that it now is. I mean, if you showed up at a Ryder Cup and nobody was allowed to cheer, you'd never go back to one. But going at one where they're singing and they're cheering and, the players get wrapped up in it, I mean, it's fantastic. The first tee at Medina, when Ian Poulter got there, I mean, he was begging the crowd to make noise and told them to keep it up while he's swinging. Ricky Fowler wants it the same way with a lot of noise. So I don't think that in any stretch of the imagination, Danielle, is it going to be quiet at Glen Eagles in Scotland. I mean, it is going to be boisterous. I mean, hopefully it'll be good sportsmanship, and I think it will. The Scots truly are as knowledgeable as any golf fans on the planet, so they're not going to cross over the line, but it's certainly not going to be a very sedate setting that we have at the Masters.
No, the Ryder Cup has been the only thing close to the Olympics that we've had in golf. When nations are against nations, and we were watching the Olympics now. I mean, Russia and USA playing a hockey match today, not for the gold, just, you know, and then USA coming out on top. That was a really exciting game, and you think everybody's going to be quiet? Okay, it's a hockey match, yeah. It's different. But still, at Ryder Cup, there is that national pride going on, you know, and I think it's really, really exciting. It'll be interesting. I was just thinking about the international crown on the LPGA. I wonder if we're going to have that kind of cheering there. But it happens at Solheim, so why not? Let's look at the Ryder Team USA. Okay, I think this will surprise a lot of folks. Ryder Cup Team USA right now. Jimmy Walker, Dustin Johnson, Phil Mickelson, Jason Duffner, Zach Johnson, Harris English, Ryan Moore, Webb Simpson, and Chris Kirk. Now, does that sound like a Ryder Cup team that'll come up in September?
No, absolutely, and you bring up a good point, and I can pretty much guarantee that that's not what the Ryder Cup will be. Double points this year at the majors and some of the bigger events. So the complexion of that team is going to change. Will there be certain guys on there? Two for sure right now. I would pretty much guarantee that Jordan Spieth will be on there. I know Jimmy Walker will be on there. I mean, he's won three times in this season. He doesn't have to do anything the rest of the year, and he'll be on the team. But there's another example of how, you can take a look at things. When Tom Watson was commenting about Jimmy Walker and the guts that he showed on that 72nd hole, making that 5-foot putt, that's the kind of player Tom Watson said that he wanted on his team. Meanwhile, Paul McGinley is saying, yeah, Jimmy Walker's the kind of player we want on that American team. He almost choked away a big lead, had a six-stroke lead, and then barely hung on. We're happy Jimmy Walker is going to be on the team. Right. So, you know, Ryder Cup is about spin. You can spin it any way you want and get the result that you desire.
Yeah, and the one thing that Watson brought up during the, you know, is with the major championships and those four majors, one win will equal what Jimmy Walker did in three wins as far as points for Ryder Cup.
No, you're right about that. And that's why in Ryder Cup year, the majors carry so much weight. And in reality, I'm a firm believer that if you win a major, it's greater than winning three regular events on the PGA Tour. So I don't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah, by the same token, sometimes winning a major is a fluke. And having won three times on the PGA Tour may be more of a picture of how that player is actually doing, and maybe not so much, you know, how well he'll be as a team member. That's where golf is very difficult, depending on when you're peaking. And a lot of guys who peak in the beginning of the year don't later on in the summer. They have a bad time. It's and then are they ready for September? So all of those factor in. It's really interesting to know that people are, you know, placing bets on things already.
If I were to put you on the witness stand and say, Danielle Tucker, give me one real example of somebody winning a major that was a real fluke, and you'd be hard-pressed to come up with a name.
I wouldn't want to embarrass anybody, but there have been a couple who have surprised us and then not done anything since winning the major.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean...
That happens. That happens.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's like, that's like talking about, let's see who's made a lot of money in his career. Well, this guy... Yeah, he made $10 million, but he really hadn't done much after that, you know. So.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I'll give you this. Out of the 150 guys who could potentially play in a major, all of them have the ability to win because all of them are excellent at what they do. Absolutely.
Yeah, no. I mean, there isn't a, you know, you could have, to win a major, you need far more than talent. You know, I mean, look at Colin Montgomery, look at Lee Westwood, look at Luke Donald. They have as much talent as anybody that's ever played the game. But the combination of their peaking at the right time, maybe catching a good break at the right time, or somebody else missing a shot at the right time. I mean, it's just so hard to win a major. There are only four a year, you know that.
Yep.
And so to even have your game remotely ready at that desired time is a feat in itself.
Bob Bubka, it is always a pleasure talking with you, and the show's over already. We just need more time, don't we?
We do. We got to get your show longer, not to have me on more, so you have more time for your sponsors.
Well, let's thank our sponsors right now. We're going to celebrate President's Day with the new Acura sale that is sure to make you feel like the commander-in-chief, because once you get into the Acura, you'll love it, okay? With the soft Milano leather, the Bluetooth hands-free link, the navigation system, the customized audio features using Pandora. You can create your own Oval Office in your new Acura MDX or RLX. And this weekend, during the President's Day 10th sale event, you'll get amazing savings. Rates as low as 0.9% APR on most new Acuras in stock, or the special lease offer starting at just $209. That's all on the 2014 Acura ILX. Stop by Acura today, 777 Ala Moana. Poipu Bay Golf Course, 18 championship holes, visually stunning. And Star Protection for property threat or risk assessment. Protection for your home, for your business, for your concert, for your special event. Get the STAR team on your property. STAR Protection's what you need. And they're in Hawaii, of course, but also in California. Thank you for your mama, and may you hit the sweet spot every time. My name is Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
You've been listening to the award-winning Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club Network statewide. Tune in next week, and we'll tee it up together only on The Golf Club.
Copyright 2014.